what happened, but to refuse its final word. In a place where the occupation tried to silence learning, these young people chose color once again. On a street devastated to crush life, students still arrive every morning. But most of all, I cherish this morning's painting because amid the ruins of a square that once taught me how to speak, life continues to insist on being heard. That's Maha Husseini writing from Gaza. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza.
You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.
This is Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development and Events Committee meeting will be held on Monday, February 9th at 5 p.m. The meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO versus the Mediazillas! It's a bird! It's a plane! It's community radio!
Here we go again, it's the game we love.
Play game.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only live board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
A show about board games and pretending you know what you're doing. I'm one of your hosts, Nate, and with me is my buddy James. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing all right, Nate. How are you doing?
I'm doing swell, thanks. As a reminder, you can comment on our show live using the OLARC messaging system KBOO.fm. Just click the Chat With Us button in the lower right corner of the window. We are pleased to welcome my friend and the biggest Omni gamer I know, Chris Spizzali.
Hello.
Who is here to talk to us about something we know very little about. I wouldn't have done it that way if you hadn't done it before
Spizzali.
The show. Something we know very little about, Warhammer. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
I know a little bit about Warhammer. I know a bit more than you.
Yeah, you are British. You're from the land of Warhammer.
Is that where Warhammer comes from?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
I know more than you.
Yeah.
I mean,
we do like war, so that does explain it.
All right, so Chris, just a little background, like get to know you sort of stuff. How did you get into the board gaming hobby?
How did I get into the board gaming hobby? I guess it started with I had this cousin in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, that I thought was super cool, a little bit older, and he was really into D&D and comics and whatnot, and I would go into his room, and I thought all that stuff was just so, I don't know, it was so rad, I was so drawn to it. So when I first started going to comic shops, there'd be that little section of like RPGs and like a couple board games, and I was drawn to it. You know, I knew it was something I wanted to do and explore. I didn't know why. It was an extension of like fantasy and sci-fi that I was already obsessed with, and I made an effort. I started buying role-playing games and forcing my friends to play them with me when I was 12, 13 years old, and that continued on into adulthood, forcing people to come and play games with me.
So, this day and age, I mentioned you're my friend. We play games together.
We spent some time, yes.
We spent some time. You're not typically the teacher of the games, right? Like, you like to outsource that when you can.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I've taught a lot of games. I feel like I paid my dues.
Yeah.
If somebody else is more excited to teach a game, more power to them. If there's something I'm really excited about and I have to teach it, I will 100% go for it. But
okay, because I was going to say, it seems like a lot of your experience is just like being the teacher then from starting out early.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me to make it happen, I had to put in the work. You know, I had to run the games. I had to organize people to come over. And I had to be the most enthusiastic about it. So
I mean, I hate teaching games. That's one of the reasons why I don't bring my family into it, because I have to teach them the games, and I'm terrible at teaching games.
You gotta have a lot of patience.
Yeah, how come you decided that's not for you?
I mean, like I said, I'll still do it if I don't have to. I don't mind. I still enjoy teaching. I still enjoy seeing people get excited about something when they start to grok it. But I don't know. I've just done it so much. I've just gotten more tired, you know.
Yeah.
And I have so many other friends that enjoy the process of teaching that I'm like, if you want to read the rule book and you want to set it up and you want to answer all the silly little questions, go for it.
There will always be at least one person like Nate who I feel like loves teaching people,
yeah,
and who's actually quite good at it. So I'm just like, leave it to them.
Yeah.
They know
yeah.
what they're doing.
How did you find your group as you got older?
As I got older, it was a little bit more difficult. Kind of the same way, but I had to kind of pick and choose a little bit more because, you know, as adults, people are kind of, their personalities are formed. So, you know, I had to kind of look for people that might be interested in it, people that I was maybe a little bit closer to that I could invite into my own little weird world and be like, check out this thing that we can do together, you know. And I kind of started with like lighter games, and I set up a game night once a week just to play Talisman. And that was about 10 years ago. And from there, once that group started to kind of grow a little bit more, I started buying more and more games, and I started organizing more and more game nights. And then my game collection grew, and then I was known as the guy who has board games. And if you want to play board games, talk to Chris. He has a bunch of board games. He'll play board games, you know. And that kind of, on its own, segued into me finding people to play Warhammer with.
So what about like, I know we brought you on here to talk about Warhammer. I don't know if that's your favorite game, but what about like a favorite game for you, or like a game you feel like everyone should play at least once?
A game that everyone should play at least once. You know, it's subjective, but I would say everybody should play Twilight Imperium 4th Edition at least once, whether you like it or not. You know, it's an experience on its own.
That's the one that takes like 8 hours to play.
Takes 8 hours. It's grandiose. It can be fiddly. It can be wildly unbalanced sometimes. But the ride from beginning to end, in my experiences, has always been wonderful. And that's another thing about gaming. For me, it's always been the journey, not the destination. I don't mind losing a game as long as I've had fun, you know, while the ship is sinking, so to say. So, yeah, I would say Twilight Imperium is a game everybody should play. There's so many. I mean, my taste, Chaos in the Old World, I think is a wonderful, wonderful game that everybody should experience at least once. So that's another one I'd like to throw out there. Eric Lang is a fantastic designer. Most of his designs have really clicked with me personally. So, yeah.
All right. So we brought you on to talk about Warhammer because we don't know much about Warhammer. So why don't you tell us and our listeners what is, and it's like Warhammer 50K? 40K? 40. What thousand
there's,
is it?
There's lots of Warhammers that you can Warhammer in. 40K, I think, is probably their most popular. I'm a big fan of Age of Sigmar, and I'm also getting back into Old World again after leaving Old World for about 5 or 6 years. But what is Warhammer? It is buying really cool toys and being able to play with them. I mean, that's my perspective. Other people have a very competitive view of it, too. You know, I'm not as involved in that. But Warhammer is, you have a setting. You have an army or armies you could pick. In my case, I have a lot of armies. And you basically build an army and have a massive battle. You get to play with your toys.
How do you decide what army you're going to go into battle with on any given game night?
For me, I just kind of pick whatever I think looks cool. Like I said, the toy factor for Warhammer and just the fighting was like what drew me to it, the dice rolls. But yeah, like you just pick whatever's cool. Other people, like I said, are way more competitive. They'll find like, you know, the metagame. They'll find the most, you know, competitive army they can have to go up against other armies and whatnot. But for me, it's always been about the fun. It's always been about the models. It's always been about blowing stuff up, you know.
Are the armies like the Magic the Gathering colored cards? Like each army has a different thing they're good at and bad at, and better used for different scenarios?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like certain armies are just like total glass cannons. They can move really fast, they can do a lot of damage. Certain armies move really slow and they're really tanky, they're really hard to kill, but it takes them, you know, a while to get across the battlefield. Certain armies are like, you know, way better at melee combat. Is it melee or melee?
Melee.
Is it melee? I say melee, and sometimes people look at me funny. Okay. Well, I'm glad I'm saying it right. other armies, like I said, are good at shooting. Some are good at like close combat and whatnot. Certain armies are like more vehicle, or like if you were playing like more fantasy style Warhammer, like more like chariot or like, you know, beast focused or whatnot. So, and there's like magic and stuff in it too. You know, you can cast spells and.
Yeah. So what's the gameplay like? Like, what? How do you move about the board? How do you engage with the other player? And is it, it's two-player?
Can you do more than two? It can player? Be played with more. I've played multiplayer games, but it's, I think, works best at two. It's, I think it was designed to be a two-player game. You know, I mean, thematically, your two generals coming in with your forces and you're duking it out. When before a game of Warhammer, for me, with the people I play with, you know, we usually have like a day set up, and if it's 40K... there's a certain way we'll play with like certain objectives, and you score points for controlling objectives. A game works, you kind of show up, you show what army you brought. You can always kind of customize your army with like special abilities and whatnot. And then you deploy your units on the board, and you usually have a roll off. Somebody's going to go first. And then there's certain phases with each turn, and then it's the other player's turn. So it's like you do all your stuff, your opponent does all their stuff. And then it's usually like, you kind of have some abilities, you'll do some movement, you'll do some shooting, and then you can do some charges, and then you'll look at everybody that's, you know, all the models that are close to each other will just kind of poke at each other with sticks and fight each other, and then, you know, after that, there'll be like a little bit of cleanup phase. You might lose some morale, some troops might run away, you know, score some points, and then it's the other player's turn.
So there's like this dice as well in this game. I know mostly dice from D&D. Is the dice more for, is it like damage rolling? Like you roll the damage you do, or is it like you hit them?
You roll buckets of dice constantly.
I've seen people just pour dice on the table.
Yeah, so you're going to, you know, count up your pretty little figurines, and they're going to roll so many dice to like shoot. And then, you know, they're looking for a target number to hit. And then all those numbers that hit, you're going to roll those again, because you're going to roll the strength of your weapon against your opponent's toughness. You know, they might have really strong armor, so that means you might have to roll higher, you know, to penetrate their armor. So then once you roll up all the wounds that you do, after that roll, they have a chance to do a saving throw where they can basically deflect, you know, the damage and whatnot. And then once you're done with all that, you tally up all the wounds and you remove casualties.
How long does that take? That sounds like it could be a lot of dice rolling. Just one round. How long is one round?
One round. I would say one round. The first round of Warhammer is, the first and the second rounds are usually the longest. Most games of Warhammer that I play are designed to be five turns. They usually end with the games that I play. Like, I mean, there might be, there's really serious Warhammer players out there that might disagree or play differently. But our games usually end on like the fourth round, and usually halfway through the fourth round, we could be like, you definitely won, you know?
You can tell who's...
Yeah, usually somebody at that point kind of concedes, or like we know the outcome. But a game usually, if you know what you're doing and you're not hanging out and talking a lot, which I like to do, because like I said, it's an experience for me, the games are about 3.5, maybe 4 hours. I think more serious, like tournament players can knock out a game in like 2 hours easily. But I like to hang out with my friends. I like to listen to Bolt Thrower. I like to have a couple beers. I like to, you know, I like, we have a good time. You
like
know,
an experience of it, like
yeah,
you said.
Yeah. Yeah. We like, we paint our models. We send each other pictures of our models. We talk about, oh, did you see this thing? And then we hang out. And it's just like you're in Warhammer world for a while. So it's kind of like hanging out with friends, you know. It's a larger community, but also like the people that I'm close to, it's you know, it's hangout time. So
Right, I'm going to go to a quick reset, and then I'm going to go back right into this. So you're listening to KBOO 90.7 Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate here with James, and this is Winner's Bias, a show about the board gaming hobby. We're talking to Chris Spizzali about Warhammer. And remember, if you would like to ask a question live, just click on the Chat With Us button on KBOO.FM. So listening to you talk about Warhammer, it sounds fun as hell.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm more of a typical Euro gamer, but not completely. I like higher interaction in my games.
You like Cosmic Encounter.
I like Cosmic Encounter. Yeah. I like Station Fall, but like I do like tend toward the Euro side of things. So, why do you think it's such a leap for the Euro gamer type of person to be like, I wanna play that. I wanna get involved with that.
I think Euro gamers, for the most part, are not attracted. Well, there's a couple reasons. There is a little bit of uncertainty in Warhammer. It's not a precise game. There is dice rolling. I will say a better player usually always wins, but there is dice rolling. Euro gamers can't stand that. You know, that's complete loss of control. Also, the entry point to Warhammer can be a little bit daunting. It's not a cheap hobby. It can be pretty pricey. There are a lot of other, just miniature gaming in general, there are a lot of other games that can be cheaper. You can play smaller skirmish games. There's other systems. Warhammer is just, it's almost like the Magic of the Gathering of like miniature gaming, to where it is just the largest beast. It's the game that most people play. And when you're getting into the hobby, you're going to want to play the game that everybody else is playing because you want to have people to play with, you know. But the level of entry can be difficult. You know, I was very fortunate at a time when I got into it that I had a lot of disposable income and time to get involved with it. So
is there a good starting point for Warhammer? Like, this is a good way to get into the game. This is where you should start. This is a faction you should buy.
Games Workshop is really good at pushing their products, notoriously, but they always have these great kind of starter boxes, which is like two factions. That's how my buddy Kevin, actually, when we started playing Fantasy and 40K, got a hold of me, because I was kind of known through a group of people as the nerd, the guy that was in the nerdy stuff. And he approached me one day, was like, would you ever, you know, want to play Warhammer? And I was like, yeah, but I was like, if we do this, you got to commit to it. You know, it's like, it's expensive. And if we're going to split a box together, so, you know, we split a box, he took, you know, one faction in that box, I took the other. And, you know, Games Workshop is very intelligent. They give you just enough to barely start playing. You know, they get you started and you instantly kind of want more once you get into it. But yeah, I would say that's the best way to start. You get a two-player starter box, you split it with your friend, and then you dive in and just kind of learn together.
This is my big thing. I actually had to divest myself of the Unmatched series of games because the collector in me was just like, oh, but I need all of it. And it was more dangerous for me.
Do you struggle with the FOMO?
I don't struggle with FOMO. It's, but like, once I start collecting things, I'm like, yeah, but I'm missing that set. And yeah, there were certain sets I was like, I don't care about, but I really wanted the big T-Rex in that one Jurassic Park set.
Right.
And I don't even care about miniature games. So like getting involved in something like Warhammer or even Arkham Horror, the card game, where it's just it is a great game.
Yeah, I love that game, yeah.
But it's like, oh, there's just this constant level of buy-in that they keep coming at you with new stuff. And you're just like, oh, I can't get myself started.
It takes a little restraint. I mean, at one point I had four 40K armies. I sold off one of them. So I still have three 40K armies. I have two Age of Sigmar armies. And right now I'm building my dwarf army for Old World. But I also have a mountain of unbuilt plastic just sitting there, and I walk by it every day. And that's another side of to Warhammer is it's also a hobby. It's also, for a lot of people, it's a lifestyle game. I don't know how I maintain it the way I do, because I do a lot of other stuff. But half of the hobby is building and painting the models. And when I first got into it, Kevin and I remember we're just kind of like, all right, well, let's just get our models built and just paint it enough to play the game. And at first it felt like this like hurdle and it wasn't fun. Now, like, building and painting for me is almost, I enjoy it almost as much as I enjoy playing the game. And that's something that really surprised me, was I do enjoy that time that I have. Like, I listen to Warhammer books. This is so dorky. I listen to Warhammer books, like audiobooks, and I build my models. And then, you know, I have like models I'm building, models that are primed, and then models that I'm in the process of painting. And the whole time I'm, you know, diving into the lore and I'm listening to like all the stories, and it gets you pumped up. And then, you know, you send pictures to your friends of like, oh, this is what I just painted, and this, I'm bringing this next week. And then you show up and you duke it out and you get to play with your toys. So that was one of the most surprising things for me, was how involved I got in the building and painting process. I'm actually going to go buy some paints after this interview, because for my dwarf army that I'm really excited about right now. So
I know I brought this up before, that I went to a friend's birthday party in England when I was a kid, and it was a Warhammer birthday party.
Oh my gosh.
And I don't know if they made me, but I run, and I loved it enough that I bought a starter kit.
Awesome.
And the only thing I did with it was just build the characters and paint it, and that was all I did. I never played it again. I just enjoyed gluing the pieces together and painting it. And I love that so much. Is this a game that you need to buy the pieces that you paint? Can you buy it already made, or you have your starter army? Do you need to buy the extras to make that army work, or is it like a?
It just depends on how you play, and like who you're playing with. If you want to play competitively, which a lot of people do, you're gonna have to really invest, and you're gonna have to have, you know, and they're always coming up with like updates for the rules and what armies can do. And if you want to stay competitive, you constantly got to be on top of that, and you got to have a lot of models. I am not that competitive. Like I said, it's more of an experience for me. I buy all the models that I think are cool, and sometimes when I get out and I play a game, I'm like, none of this works. You know, this unit does not work with this unit. This character here doesn't do anything for me. And there's always a points limit that you're buying into. Like, units and models are worth a certain amount of points. You agree with your opponent the point limit you're going to be included in your army. And then you can just kind of tally up to that amount. And if you build an incorrect army, you can just get crushed on turn one or two.
But is that half the fun of it, is like building it and then working out that?
Oh, yeah. You know, this is it's fun seeing what works and what doesn't. It's also, for me personally, it's always fun seeing like a unit you thought was going to be completely worthless be like the star of the show, or like a unit that just should be dead, but you keep rolling all these saving throws and it just will not die, and your opponent is screaming across the table because it needs to wipe out that tank or whatever, you know, to control that objective, and it just can't kill it because I just keep getting lucky and rolling fives and sixes. Help, you know,
helps bring the story to life a bit.
Yeah, and then, you know, you talk about it afterwards. We always talk about our game for at least like, you know, have a beer and talk about our game for like an hour or so, you know.
Well, and that's like one of the things I really like playing games with you in general, is that like you mentioned, you don't care about winning, but you're also just in it for the experience.
Yeah,
and so like
I like winning.
Yeah,
I'll try to win. Yeah.
Well, it just doesn't happen. Like that's the thing. Like you always want to try to win, but like you're not. And that's not where your self-esteem is coming from. You seem like you enjoy other people's turns, and like you just seem like you're happy to be there with friends. And that's
absolutely
one of the things that's great about playing with you. Do you ever build terrain?
No. I buy terrain. there is some terrain that I built. The Games Workshop terrain, I think, is pretty pricey. Etsy is a great place to get terrain. Terrain's actually really easy to paint because you don't have to put a lot of work into it. You can make, if you have an airbrush, you can make any piece of terrain look like pretty cool pretty quickly. And I don't like to overpaint my terrain too, because the focal point is the models. So I don't have like super highly detailed terrain. And then there's a lot of companies where you can buy pre-built resin terrain that's like pre-painted. That's beautiful. So me and the friends I play with, we have a massive collection. In the basement of the house I'm living in now, it's just all Warhammer terrain and Warhammer models and different battle mats that we play on and all the books. You know, it's my nerdy little downstairs.
Knowing whose house you're living in. Yeah. And
just it's approved.
Hilarious. And I know it's approved, but I know that's not how he would have set that.
Well, he had a lot of train games down, you know, a lot of 18XX when I got there, you know, a lot of 18XX money when I showed up. That's all gone. That's all pushed to the side. It's all.
Do you need terrain to play this game, or can you just play it on any table? Is it like the terrain makes it more fun?
You don't need, I mean, you want to have terrain because it's a big part of the game of how you're going to move around terrain. It gives cover, line of sight, all that stuff. It makes the game really more interesting and tactical. But you could, if you wanted to, you could use like a stack of books and coffee cups and you could say, oh, this is like a silo, and this stack of books over here, this is like a bombed out building. You know, you don't have to have terrain, but it's such like a cinematic and visual experience that the more terrain you have and the cooler it looks, the more you're engrossed in the game and the more you're just kind of pulled into it. So, yeah.
I do love the idea of these Warhammer figures making their way through like cereal boxes and mugs and just like, I don't know. There's like a Micro Machines video game a racing game from when I was a kid, I guess.
I remember that game. That was a good game.
Yeah. And it would just be like existing in that world where everything's just giant and you're just going around like common household things, having
like
a war.
Like a breakfast table and yeah. You'd be like going around spilt milk and stuff. Yeah.
There's actually at Gen Con this year, a company came out with a miniatures game where it was people that have shown up on Earth and they're just, everybody's an inch tall, but they're fighting on like tabletops and counters. So you do just use stuff around your house. And awesome. It's basically like Micro Machine, like we were talking about, but it's just like armies fighting.
That's,
yeah.
I love that.
So you don't have to buy any terrain. You can just use stuff around your house. So.
That's kind of like, what was that game with the Matchbox cars that, Wastelands?
Gaslands?
Gaslands.
Yeah.
Where you just like, you'd use Matchbox cars and whatever you have and just like race around. Yeah. I very much enjoy that sort of design philosophy of just like, you've got the stuff.
Yeah,
we'll just give you the rules.
Yeah, and also, I mean, with gaming, it's your experience. It's wherever you want to take it and what you want it to be. You know, there are no rules. It's your game, especially when it comes to miniature gaming. So
you like you brought up all these things that you don't have to get, but you can get for Warhammer.
Right.
So if you're going over a friend's house to play, or like you going to play at a game store, how hard is it to travel with all this?
My buddy Jesse does it all on bike. He has these nice containers that he just hooks onto the side of his bike and he rides his models down.
I'm picturing like really suitcases coming in with those.
Yeah, it's a lot of... If you want to, you can invest in these overexpensive suitcases to carry your models in. And if you have the extra income, more power to you. I just put everything in a cardboard box and hope my models don't bump into each other to chip the paint. But yeah, it's a stretch. I'm very fortunate that a lot of people come to my house to play because I've got the space. So they usually have to do a lot of transportation. But when I would play a Guardian Games, yeah, I would just load everything up in a cardboard box.
Just boxes after boxes after boxes.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when you ask your partner, it's like, hey, can you drop me off and then pick me up later? You know,
so
you kind of feel like you're in seventh grade. Yeah. But you're also doing like a seventh grade kind of activity anyways, so you might as well just go all in. Yeah.
How long does it take to set it up? Is that like half the time?
Like the competitive and casual environments are different. They have specific ways they set it up competitively to where it's perfectly balanced. When I play at home, we build the battlefield together and we usually have a really great time. Let's put this cool thing over here. Let's put like a hill over here. Oh, look, we can build like this wall, and inside the wall we'll have like a bunch of bombed out craters and whatnot, you know. So it set up can take a while, but we usually set our games up in about 30, 40 minutes. We go over the scenarios, and then we just start deploying our armies and just go at it. But we've been doing it for a very long time.
Yeah, and that probably helps you get into the Warhammer mode of setting it up and like starting the story and building it up together as
a
team, yeah.
Yeah, and that's almost another aspect of the game that's a lot of fun too. You kind of... There's always like right before the battle starts, like, you know, we're all taking pictures. Like it's a very visual experience. Well, it is a very tactical game. I'm not going to lie and say it isn't about the models and it isn't about like how everything looks cool. And it is about just like the excitement of like chucking dice. So for me anyways.
All right. So we're just about out of time, but I do want to ask you, what I mentioned you being an Omni gamer. And so what is it about like your personality that makes you sort of open to all of the varied experiences of like the board gaming hobby, because we didn't talk about it, but it's like even a hobby of hobbies kind
right,
of
right.
And so like what about your personality do you think draws you to all of these aspects?
I don't know. I think once I got more involved with it and once I got to be part of a larger community of people and knowing people, I just started noticing how much cool stuff there is out there to experience, and like why limit yourself to one thing. And it's something that makes me very happy, and I just want to dive in and see as much as I can. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to explain. It's just like there's always something rad and always something around the corner. And whenever I'm in like a game shop, and it's just like when I was a kid, when I go into that comic shop, and there'd be all these comics and all these adventures that I would want to experience and dive into. And it's the same thing with gaming. It's like now I can like dive in and have all these experiences. And yeah, that's where I'm at.
You literally hit me in the heart right there. It's like broad like life philosophy. Yeah. I think that would be valuable.
Life is short. Enjoy it. Do as much as you can. There's so much crap going on in the world.
I didn't even know OmniGamer was a thing. I just assumed if you liked board games, you're going to try and play all of them.
No,
I didn't know. I just thought that was a thing people did.
Once you get deeper in the hobby, there are people that are very opposed to like a lot of. You got to be very careful who you play games with.
That's just what I force you to do is try a bunch of things. All right, Chris, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely.
Thank you all for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kbu.org, and you can find us on Instagram at winnersbias. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. We want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we're funded by you, the listener. Just go to kbu.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but why you think your army is the best. Have a good one.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM.
This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.